Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of So Much More Than Stardust podcast. We're trying something different today. This is the first video podcast that we are doing, and we are doing it out of Greer, South Carolina. South, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We have to pause. Part deux.
All right. We're back on. Wendy has a couple of kids, a cat and a dog. So she had to let the dog out. So we're recording this in Greer, South Carolina. I had come down here to do a BMW off-road riders school. Mm-hmm. And Wendy's an instructor at that school. And as you folks know, I'm always looking for people to talk to who make this life more interesting. And I started thinking, Wendy is one of those people. Why don't I talk to her? So on my way down, I asked Wendy if she'd be willing to talk to me for the podcast, and she kindly agreed. She also kindly let me stay at her new house. So congratulations on the new house.
Thank
you. Must
you.
Be super excited. It's fantastic. I love it.
Thank you. I am super excited. It's nice to just have my own space.
And it's been a dream for you for a long time to have your own place, to do with it what you will. How has the experience been for you?
Interesting. It was a rocky process. I mean, the market right now is nuts, right? So it's just, I put offers on houses that were really great offers and still was outbid in cash. And that was difficult, but we closed. I got the place. I'm in.
You're here.
I love it.
Yes, I love it too. It's a great setting.
Thanks.
Yeah. It's sort of out in the country a little bit, but it's close to town. And,
yeah.
You know. That's like awesome.
Happy medium.
Yeah,
yeah.
I am very happy for you.
And it's got a huge garage.
So, you and I met at another motorcycle school, right?
Yeah.
You know, American Super Camp.
Yeah.
And I was with a group of friends, as were you, and we happened to be having dinner at the same restaurant.
Yeah.
And we started exchanging jokes over, you know, from one table to another, and
right.
then you decided to come join us.
Right.
Yeah, much to our pleasure, and we shared some fantastic times then. It was a lot of laughter, a lot of fun.
Yes.
So, and you were sort of, so traditionally, motorcycling has been a male-dominated sport,
would you
say?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah. So may I ask what got you interested in motorcycle riding?
Sure. When I was a kid, we moved around a lot, and for a couple of years we lived in Hawaii. And when we lived there, my dad had a motorcycle. So, do you want me to go get him
to
make
what?
That barking stop?
No, that's okay.
I'm going to hit pause. It's going to sound terrible on the audio. So,
you know, sorry to interrupt, but we'd already been interrupted by your kids. And just like kids have this inbuilt radar for when the parents are getting romantically frisky, I think pets recognize that you're not paying them attention.
That's exactly
and you're
right.
doing something else, so they demand your attention.
That's exactly.
Anyways,
right.
you were talking about... anyways, I thought it was funny. So, how did you get into motorcycling? You were in Hawaii with the...
Right, yeah. When I was a kid, we lived in Hawaii for a couple of years. My dad was in the Army, and at the time, he had a motorcycle. And I was actually...
What kind of motorcycle did he have? Do you remember?
Yes, it was a Honda 750 Cruiser.
Okay.
Like a Nighthawk or something.
Oh, the Nighthawk.
No, it was more cruiser than that.
Huh.
But I remember it was red 750.
Okay.
Honda.
Uh-huh.
Great bikes.
Yeah.
But the first time I rode on the back with him, it terrified me.
How old were you then?
10-ish.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like 10 years old.
Yeah.
He had taken my brothers out for a ride first. And he was leaning intentionally, like, super low in the turns.
Uh-huh.
And it scared me.
Uh-huh.
I didn't like it. So
So you said, I don't like this.
I don't like
this. I have to do this.
Yeah. I said, I don't like this. I'm never riding a motorcycle.
Uh-huh.
And then my parents, like, talked about it, and my dad decided he just wouldn't lean so much in the turns.
This is
I can't work under this condition. We have to start this whole, re-record that whole section, because we'll just start over and you can edit it.
Okay. So, you had started telling me how your love of motorcycling started. Am I correct in assuming that you have a love of motorcycle riding and motorcycles?
Pretty passionate about it.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah. So when I was a kid, we lived in Hawaii for a couple of years. My dad was in the Army, and he had a motorcycle at the time. It was a Honda Cruiser 750 mm-hmm. of some sort. And when the first time I rode with him, I hated it. It terrified me. He was like leaning super low in the turns because he thought that I would think that it was fun. I did not think that it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I told my mom that I didn't like it and I didn't want to go again. She told my dad, who just agreed to not turn so low. So after that, I really enjoyed riding on the back. And any chance I got, I would at the time. Well, years went by after that. He didn't have a motorcycle. I was in my late 20s, and a friend of mine, we were going out to dinner, and he said, do you want to take the bike? And I'm like, yeah, sure, let's take the motorcycle. I felt comfortable doing it because I was comfortable with bikes from a kid. So he picked me up, and I'm sitting on the back of the bike thinking, man, it'd be so cool to have a motorcycle. And I realized, wait a second, I'm a grown-up. If I want a motorcycle, I can just go get one. So I decided that I would have my dad teach me how to ride
mm-hmm.
because at the time I was in Chicago, he was in North Carolina, and he had two motorcycles. So I could just use one of his giant cruisers and have him teach me how to ride. Thankfully, this friend was like, absolutely not. That's a terrible idea. Here's the MSF course. Like, take the beginner's rider's course. They provide the motorcycle.
So MSF is an organization in the United States that
right.
is nationwide.
Yes.
And that the acronym MSF stands for Motorcycle Safety Foundation.
That's right.
And they teach people how to ride motorcycles.
So they have multiple courses, but they have what's called a basic rider's course.
Oh, the beginner's course.
And it's just the beginner's course. You go from knowing nothing about how to ride a motorcycle to getting your motorcycle license in the end. And they teach a lot of how to ride safely and things like that.
And for those of us who are listening and perhaps are not conversant with motorcycles, these courses are organized at a nominal fee,
right?
In different cities
right.
in every state. So, you know,
yes.
Illinois will have one, Missouri has one, et cetera.
Right.
And they're usually taught at college campuses
right.
or, you know,
in
big parking lots, et cetera.
Right, exactly.
And they provide the motorcycles.
That's right.
And all you have to do is register for it and show up with
right.
a helmet.
Right.
And
the proper
protective gear.
Right. Well, they say you just have to have your skin covered. So you have
right.
to have gloves, you have to have boots that cover your ankles, but you can wear a long sleeve jacket and jeans.
Okay.
But it's all on the MSF website.
Right.
Yeah.
So you showed up.
So, yeah, I took the course.
And where, this was in Chicago?
In Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Where in Chicago was it?
What year?
No, where?
Oh, where? At the outside of the Allstate Arena.
Oh, okay.
On the south side.
Right.
Yeah, in one of those giant parking lots.
Okay.
With a school that's still there. It's called Motorcycle Riding School. And it was awesome. It was just a weekend.
So did you approach this experience with excitement or intimidation or in a spirit of curiosity? I mean, were you already passionate about motorcycles, or was it a passion in its nascent, so to speak, or just beginning?
It was a passion that hit me upside the head.
In is that right?
Moment, the moment I decided I was going to go take this course,
you
like
were
that, that was it. I was like super stoked.
Okay.
And then the night before the class, I was like, "What did I get myself into? I don't know anything about riding motorcycles. Like, this is going to be crazy. And in Chicago. But I took the course. A week later, you had to come back and take the test. So I took the test, got my license.
Which is the riding test.
The riding, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like actual physical riding, not riding.
Yeah.
So I took the riding portion of the test, got my license. Mm-hmm. That was on a Friday. Mm-hmm. On Wednesday, like I was all over Craigslist for weeks. Finally found a motorcycle out in the suburbs of Chicago. $500. It was a 1975 Honda CB200. So just like a vintage Honda motorcycle, little one. A friend of mine helped me get it into the city. We trailered it in. That was Wednesday. And I rode to work on Thursday.
What were you doing at that time?
I worked for a wealth management firm in the Loop.
Okay.
And I lived in Logan Square, which is like a neighborhood on the west side.
I used to live in Logan Square as
well.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
right off of Kedzie Avenue.
Yeah. 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 Right. I was off of Fullerton.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I rode across Fullerton and then got onto the highway. And my rationale to myself to convince myself to do this crazy thing was, it's going to be stop and go traffic, so they're not going to be going that fast. And if I get on the highway and they are going fast, then I can just take the next exit and take surface streets into the city. And I didn't have to. It was stop and go traffic. So my clutch control now is amazing.
Hmm. So was that experience intimidating?
It wasn't for me at the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I was definitely nervous about it, but I had a backup plan. Also,
which was
going
through the smaller streets.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you always been adventurous?
You know, it's funny. I don't consider myself super adventurous.
You're down, huh?
I don't. I'm not a super risky person. I'm pretty risk averse.
Huh.
I know it doesn't seem that way, especially in this story, but
yeah. So you said, you know, you were in Hawaii with your dad. You come from a military family.
Right.
So right. When I say military, I don't...
Army.
Okay, so your dad was Army.
Mm-hmm.
So that meant that you were from nowhere and you were from everywhere. Right.
Right?
You
yeah.
know, so tell us a little bit about, you know, growing up as part of a military family and how that experience was.
Yeah, I would say that there are a ton of benefits to moving around a ton and there are some drawbacks, but growing up, I didn't know any different.
Okay.
We moved, I mean, from when I was really little, we just moved every 2 years. So for me, that was normal, which is great. It translates into adulthood as, you know, I've never met a stranger. I can talk to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, I was always like the super nerdy kid in school, so every 2 years I had like this renewed hope and chance of like becoming the cool kid, which let me tell you, never happened.
I think it happened,
okay.
But you know,
yeah, like,
maybe
well
later
after
on
school,
in life.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right. Not when one wants it to happen.
Right,
but,
right.
And that's okay. I think cool is overrated.
That's exactly right.
I think authenticity is you know, what we strive for, and which
right.
is probably one of the characteristics that I respect about you. So, you never thought, or did you ever consider that your passion would someday lead to work or, you know, a more active role in not only writing yourself, but teaching other people?
No, not at all. Like, I never thought that I would be where I'm at now. Actually, I have a really funny story about that.
Please tell.
So, three or four years ago, I was in New Orleans with my best friends, Natalie and Alyssa, for Alyssa's brother's wedding.
Mm.
And at the reception, they had this like really amazing reception in this restaurant, and there were like all these different rooms and stuff that you can wander around and live music, and they had a card reader there. Like a psychic tarot card reader lady.
Wow.
And so I got in line and I was like, oh, that's going to be so fun. And she told me that I was going to have a career change and that I was going to find myself in a position, like in a job, where I would be helping people. And I tried to think of all of these things, like, is it this, is it that? And she was like, no, you have never thought of it. You won't think of it right now. You're not going to be able to tell me, and I'm not going to be able to tell you. I can just say that you will not see it coming. You don't know what it is, but you're going to be helping people in a way that you never expected.
And
then three years later.
Did she say it was going to be a positive change?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So I should take a moment here to say that, you know, the course that I came here to attend, Wendy actually is the lead instructor for the course, at least, she's the one who...
I'm in training.
Yeah. who's been doing all the... going over the drills and telling us what to do, and this is the second time I've seen her do that, and she's made amazing progress, and I'm super impressed by how much effort she's put into it and how much improvement I was able to see, and she's taught me a lot, so that has been super cool. But getting back to before we continue further on this journey into your motorcycle adventure. So, tarot card reader, and then all of a sudden I remembered that you have at least have a connection to the spiritual world in terms of that you have experienced supernatural phenomena, or, you know, you think that. Well, why don't you tell us? Do you believe in ghosts? Let me ask you that.
I totally believe in ghosts because I have seen them with my own eyes. Before that, I wasn't, I don't know, I was kind of open to things. I didn't really think one thing or another, like, oh, there definitely is or
okay.
there definitely isn't.
All right, so there was a period where you didn't have an opinion one way or another.
Right, exactly, okay. Exactly. Okay. And then I saw a ghost, and now I totally have an opinion.
So tell me the story about the ghost, because I've never seen a ghost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was a little bit of a perv.
Okay.
But I was renting a house with a friend.
Where?
In Indianapolis.
Okay.
The south side of Indianapolis. And I think I was 21 or 22, like mm-hmm. super young, early 20s. And one night, I'd gotten out of the shower. My roommate wasn't home. And I was facing the mirror, doing my makeup in the mirror, like just in a towel. And I saw someone out of the corner of my eye in the doorway, enough that I was like, oh, right? It scared me because here I am, like half naked.
So this was somebody that you saw in the mirror?
No. I was in the mirror doing my makeup, and out of the corner of my eye off the side in the doorway, I saw someone, enough that it made me like jump and catch my breath. And I looked, and just out of the corner of my vision, I saw this person like go down the hallway.
So there was definite suggestion that it was a person or a human
form. I
can
tell you what
form.
They look like.
No.
Yes, what they were wearing. Like, that's how much I could see. It totally freaked me out because I'm like standing there half naked thinking the house is empty. I don't have music playing or anything. It's silent.
Okay.
And then I see someone standing in the doorway.
Was this an old house?
Yeah, but I mean, like... not like 100 years old or anything.
Okay.
It was just like a single level,
right.
Three bedroom little house. But I looked around the corner out of the door and just saw like the whisper or shadow of somebody go into my room. So this person had walked down the hallway and turned into my room. At the end of the hall, there were bedrooms on either side. I turned into mine. Right.
Okay.
And so I was like, I knew it wasn't a person. I didn't hear footsteps down the hallway. It was just, I saw this person, they disappeared out of my vision. I looked and it was just like a shadow going towards my room. And I was like, oh, hell no. So I just like looked around, poked around, nothing, turned all the lights on in the house, finished getting ready and left.
You did not go back into your room?
Well, I had to because I had to get dressed. But
so
I mean, I went back and looked. There was nobody there.
There was nobody there.
Nothing. Yeah.
Was anything different?
No.
All right. So, you know, I've always heard, and especially in movies, whenever there's a ghostly presence or spirit around, there's like temperature changes.
None of that.
No,
nothing.
Things falling over. No,
no
noises.
There was no weird stuff going on in the house. Like this one thing happened, and I was like, that was freaking weird.
Okay.
But nothing else happened
All
until
right.
like a month later or something.
Mm-hmm.
same scenario, except I'm in my bedroom sitting on the floor doing my makeup in the mirror, and the door is to my bedroom is to my right. And same thing, doing my makeup, and then out of the corner of my eye, somebody's there, except I know that I'm home by myself. And so after that, I was like, okay, sir, you need to leave. I don't know what your deal is, but I don't want to see you. I don't want you here. It's okay to cross over. I don't know if you know this, but you are dead, and you need to go. I never saw him again.
Really?
Mm-hmm. You know what he's wearing?
What?
Dark blue jeans.
Uh-huh.
Like 1950s regular dude. Dark blue jeans, tucked in red plaid shirt with a belt and boots, and he had a beard, and he was tall and thin.
Huh.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, weird stuff didn't happen. It wasn't like books lying off the shelf or anything. It was just, he just liked to watch me put my makeup on.
Did you get the sense that there was melancholy in that spirit, or sadness, or anything? Or was it just, you know, just a dude looking at a...
Just a dude watching some girl put on makeup.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that would have been freaky, and I would have ran out of that house screaming like a little child.
It didn't feel scary.
It did not feel scary.
Yeah, it didn't feel scary. I didn't feel, like, threatened at all. I just felt like I was being watched.
And has that been your only experience with the supernatural? It is not. Okay, tell me more.
I think my grandma's psychic. She told me many years ago that she would have these dreams about people in the family writing her letters.
Okay.
And in her dream, she would, you know, the mail person would come, and she'd go down, check the mail, come back in the house, and like, oh, it's a note from whoever. And so she'd read the letter, and then she would wake up from these dreams exhausted, with, like, tired eyes from reading, right, from her eyes moving all night.
Oh, so this whole letter experience was in her dream?
In her dreams.
Okay.
Yep, that was all in her dreams. And then she would call whoever it was, like if it was my mom, she'd call my mom and say, hey, I had a dream about you last night that you wrote me this letter, and this is what it said, and it would freak the other person out. Or, you know, they would say, like, oh, well, we never talked about that. Like, how do you know about that? When my grandma told me this, I thought, she's probably just reading something on Facebook or whatever, forgets where she learned the information, has these crazy dreams. She, you know, something like that. She's picking up this information somewhere in conversation, whatever. Until she called me one day and said, hey, Wendy, I had one of those weird dreams about you. And I was like, what'd the letter say? And she told me things that I hadn't talked to anybody about.
But you were going through stuff at that time.
Yes. Yes.
So, did she come up with any kind of suggestions, or was it just an offer of support?
No, it freaked her out. She didn't like it. She didn't like having these dreams, but she had already talked to me about it and knew that I was, like, comfortable talking to her about it. So, mm-hmm. She called to tell me what she had dreamed about me.
So, she didn't think of this as a gift or any kind of special.
Like
she
mm-hmm.
just...
It freaked her out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you had an experience like that?
No, I've definitely had moments where I'm like, this feels like deja vu, which everybody has, but I'll say to myself, I think this is what's going to happen next. And every once in a while, that's exactly what happens next. And I'm like, am I having deja vu? Or am I psychic like my grandma?
So,
it's been a while though.
Well, there are certain people who believe that, you know, we live in a simulation and that, you know, the simulation is a program which is run on a computer which is outside of our access.
Right. Like the Matrix?
Sort of. And when there's a glitch in the programming...
In the Matrix?
Yes. It
it's like deja
vu. It occurs to us as a deja vu.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, there's a scientific explanation for deja vu.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Anyways. Okay. So, we're at a party, and the tarot card reader told you that there were going to be changes in your life. So, you know, at this point in time, you were working for a wealth management firm. You'd also done some modeling in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've sort of tried your hand at a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, So what was your first job out of school?
I worked in school. I mean, I started working when I was 13.
When you were 13. Mm-hmm. What did you start doing?
I was a carny.
You know, my daughter says that all the time. She used to work at one of those, you know, video arcade putt-putt golf place. Yeah, yeah. And she used to refer to herself as a carny. So tell me about your carny experience.
We were like a traveling carny family situation. So some friends of the family owned one of those trailer food things where you like pull it behind the truck and you park it and you leave it there for a few days, and corn dogs and
elephant ears
and that kind of stuff. Yeah, it was one of those. So I think I got paid like $7 an hour.
That's not bad.
Oh, it was great. Yeah. When I was 13.
I know.
I never came home with money because we were at the carnival.
Oh, of course.
So they'd work me early, right? And then I would take my money and go out and ride rides and stuff. But so that was my first job. But
so did you ever go watch the Wall of Death? Did they have one of those things there where the motorcycle guy
rides at the carnival, but I have seen one, the one in Milwaukee. But I found out recently, I was talking to my dad about that. I had a great or great-great aunt who rode that. And I have her name, but I've tried Googling and stuff and I can't track down any information. But I have her name and I have where she was from, and she was from Chicago.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm like, one day I'm going to figure out what her history was.
Huh.
So if anybody can help me with that, that would be a dream.
That would be great. We'll put that in our comment section, and you know, so people can reach out to you if they have any way of helping you out.
There couldn't have been that many women doing it.
No. I mean, one would think not.
Yeah.
Anyways. So, okay, so, you know, you grow up, you know, you stop being a carny. How long were you a carny for?
Like 2 summers.
Yeah.
Not long. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So then you got sick of the carny scene.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. When I was a kid, it was my dream to run away with the circus when it used to come into town.
That does not surprise me about you.
But I, but I didn't have any talents that would lend themselves, you know, I couldn't juggle for anything.
You could clean.
Yeah, but that's not what you want. You want to be
You want to be in the show.
Yes. Yeah, you want to be in the show, right? Yeah. Yeah, never got around to that.
Nice.
What next?
Well, I mean, I have my day job. I work in private equity, which I love. And then on the weekends, I teach at the Performance Center. And right now, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I mean, if I could make a bunch of money riding motorcycles, that's the dream.
That's, you know, all of our dream. Yeah, but it takes a lot of hard work, which, know that you're not averse to doing. So,
that's
tell us a little bit about how a person, you know, I started riding motorcycles when I was, you know, I don't know, 13 or 14, something like that, right? And stopped for a while and then started back up again. But, you know, I've been riding them off and on for almost 40 years.
Yeah.
So how does a person who takes up motorcycling in their adult life go from being a total newbie taking an MSF course to all of us, well, not all of a sudden, but, you know, could you describe that journey for us, which, you know, or the path that it took for you to go from there to, you know, where you are today in terms of motorcycle riding?
I like to call it the 10-year overnight success.
Ah, 10
years. Which I've heard for lots of people, right?
Yeah.
You know, I took the MSF course and I was super lucky because I had a lot of people around me that had been riding for a long time, so they had a lot of great knowledge to pass on, whether it was mechanical or riding or just positive peer pressure to make sure I was always wearing my gear, things like that. And another thing the group was very big on was continuing education. And I really enjoy taking courses. I feel like the more you learn about riding, the more fun it becomes. And one of the best parts about motorcycling is that there's always something new to learn, no matter what level you're at. So I started on that little 200cc Honda. I took training courses. If anybody let me ride their bike, I would ride it. If anybody said, oh, let's go try this motorcycle thing, I would do it. And I think that I've gotten as far as I have because I say yes.
Yeah. Right?
I'm like up for whatever the adventure is. I want to go. I want to do it. I want to try it. So I think that has been great. And just really continuing to take classes because the classes are fun.
Right.
Even just to do them, just to do them. I mean, that's how I ended up going to American Super Camp. Mm-hmm. I'd never ridden off-road ever.
So could you share a little bit about American Super Camp?
Oh, man. I love it.
Uh-huh.
Flat track racing school or flat track sliding school. Depending on how you look at it.
All right.
It's awesome. It's 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
They give you all of the gear.
Mm-hmm.
They give you the motorcycle with zero liability. All you have to do is show up in your socks and underwear. They feed you lunch. So, you know, you show up and you ride for a couple of days. They break you up into groups. So if you have no experience, you get put in one group. But if you have experience, they separate you.
Would you recommend American Super Camp to somebody who rides already and wants to get better at it?
Yes, I would say as long as you have full control of operating a motorcycle, you're ready for Super Camp, even if you have no off-road experience. Off-road riding translates instantly to on-road riding, but on-road riding does not translate to off-road riding. It doesn't matter. Somebody in class today said, there's no amount of on-road riding that will prepare you to ride off-road, and that is exactly right. But all of the off-road riding that you do improves your on-road riding. And that was the experience I had the first time I went to Super Camp.
So, when we talk to our friends, and when I say we, I mean, you know, people who actively participate in riding motorcycles and encourage other people to ride motorcycles as well. So, we tell them that it is not difficult to ride a motorcycle, especially if you know how to ride a bike, you know, a pedal bike.
Right.
What I think we purposely leave out is that it takes a lot of hard work and a lot of training to ride a motorcycle well.
That's right.
And to do so in a safe and aware fashion.
Right.
So have you had to work hard with your training for the role that you're doing right now with the BMW Academy?
It's really just coming naturally. No.
Yeah.
No. No, I work every weekend. So when I chat with people about having a day job and working at the PC, I mean, to be fully certified, it takes a year to a year and a half. I'm coming up very quickly to a year. So mm-hmm. I think we're going to go over that 1 year mark a little bit. And I'm there almost every single weekend. I'm there 3 weekends out of 4 a month. And when you think about it, it's like, wow, you work every single day because you also have a day job. But it doesn't really feel like work because it's so fun. But it is. I mean, it's hard. It's hard work. It's exhausting. I come home and want to be in bed by 7 p.m. every night after riding at the PC all day. But it's also just amazing. I mean, and the people there also make it amazing.
So, and I can testify to this. I spent a day today doing what Wendy does every weekend, 2 days, and I'm exhausted. You know, right now somebody could, you know, Piper, her little 10-pound puppy, could come over and push me over, and I'd fall right down. And she does this every weekend, and as we found out today, in all kinds of weather. So, you know, it rained all day today, and, you know, Wendy was a trooper. So there's something, you know, which I think we've talked about this before. Motorcycling has been a male-dominated sport.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, and I say fortunately, you know, with, you know, no tongue in cheek, I think that, you know, a success, I love motorcycling enough that I want everybody to be involved in it. I want little kids on dirt bikes.
Yeah.
I love seeing older people, you know, we were talking about the two older brothers who are participating in the course. And, you know, my remark to you was, isn't that great just to see those two brothers doing this together?
Right.
And we recognize it as a bonding experience. And we like to think of it as an inclusive sport, which should be accessible to everybody. As a woman rider, have you run into, you know, any established stereotypes where, you know, people say, she's a woman, she can't really ride a motorcycle well, or, you know, I mean, you know.
Just things like that.
Yeah.
So I just bought a little mini bike 110 on Craigslist. And I am not joking. This is just 2 days ago. We're messaging on Facebook. He has my name. It's Wendy. It's not like, I don't know, it's not some...
Chris.
Right, it's not like Chris or something. Right, yeah. It's Wendy. I pull up and I get out of the car and he like comes out of the house. Guy comes out of the house and he's like, yeah? And I was like, hi, I'm Wendy. And he's like, okay. And I was like, I'm here for the bike. And he was like, okay. And so we start walking towards the garage and he's like, no offense or anything, but... I said, you were expecting a man. And he was like, yeah. Yeah, I was. I wasn't expecting you. Like, yeah, dude. Yeah, women ride and buy motorcycles now.
So, do you think overall the motorcycling community is receptive enough and welcoming enough to women today? Or could they be better?
They could always do better, for sure. I don't know why, but I've had a very different experience from a lot of women. I hear a lot of stories from women that have a really hard time. They don't feel accepted. They feel like they're set apart constantly. I haven't really had that experience, so I can't speak a lot to it. And I think a big part of that, for me anyway, is just I don't care if you think I can ride or not. I don't care if you think I should be here or not. I don't associate with people who think that it's not for women. And I don't come across a lot of people that think that. So I haven't had any big, like, major issues with that. I think I've been pretty lucky in that regard. On the internet, I've had experiences like that. But
okay,
to me, that's, like, not real life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like...
It's like where people have a license to be mean. Right,
right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You don't know me. I don't know you. You can walk off a bridge. Bye. I don't care. I don't have time for you.
Yeah.
And that kind of attitude. But, I mean, one time I was parking my bike in a parking lot in Chicago, and this little kid who was 5 years old probably with his mom said, I didn't know girls could ride motorcycles. And I said, honey, girls can do anything boys can do.
Yeah, anything they want to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just mind-blowing for him, but I also really like being that example.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that was pretty exciting. But yeah, it exists. People could definitely do better.
Okay.
It would be super helpful if we could get gear that was just as protective as men's gear.
Yeah.
In women's sizing.
So that I recently read a post by you celebrating the fact that somebody, and I forget who the company was, has started making a particular piece of gear now in women's sizes and fit to the women form.
Yes.
I do remember one time offering you one of my protective gears, and you're like, Wakas, this is not going to work for me. And I was like, why? It's really good. And you were like, yeah, this is not going to work. Yeah. So, you know, and that was my first introduction to the fact that, you know, really, until Icon started making the Stella gear,
yeah,
you know, there was really nobody manufacturing gear, at least, you know, none that you could find easily.
Right.
Perhaps, you know, in the European countries there was.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't as common here, I guess, but it's becoming more common. There are companies like Climb who have a wonderful women's suit, a couple of versions of their women's suits. BMW has had women's suits, but they just came out with the rally suit, and uh-huh. that is what I'm super excited about.
Right.
I love that, like, off-road.
And I know that the French manufacturer Revit makes women's gear too.
Yeah. And Tortec.
And Tortec does
yeah,
too?
I think so.
Oh, cool. They do. They do. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there are brands that make them.
Yeah.
One of the things that we as women run into a lot is that they'll make similar looking gear or style gear, but the protection will be less.
Really?
And so the implication is like,
you don't ride hard enough.
Bingo. We don't ride hard enough, or we're not doing the things that men are doing that need more protection than we do. You know what I mean? Like, just,
yeah.
It's so silly.
Yeah.
So it's nice to see the companies finally coming around. But we're the fastest growing segment in the motorcycle industry, right? Women. So.
Yeah. And that is great, you know, because that just means our sport is growing.
That's exactly right.
Right.
What is it? A rising tide raises all ships.
Yeah. So I for one, I love riding with you. You know, we've ridden, you know, a bunch of different times, and I always welcome female riders because, you know, for me, it's a selfish thing. Hey, as long as more people are learning to ride, that means they'll still keep on making motorcycles and I'll still keep on having
growing
fun.
Growing the sport. Yeah. Yep.
So, now, one of our common friends, mm-hmm. Jen, she got her MSF certification not so long ago.
Yep.
And she did some pioneering work. You know, she was in the Northeast at that mm-hmm. time in setting up an all-female class. And, you know, Kate, my friend, you know, mm-hmm. she took her MSF class as well. Mm-hmm. And her experience was less than positive. She thought that the male instructors were condescending, perhaps a little, because, you know, it was a mixed class mm-hmm. and paid more attention to the guys, you know, said, oh, you must have been riding dirt bikes since you were a kid, it's just the same, etc., etc., and not paying enough attention to the people who really needed it, who was participating in the sport for the first time.
Right.
So how do you feel about dedicated women's teaching classes, et cetera, et cetera. And what have you started doing with that?
I love women's only courses.
Okay, tell me why.
I'll tell you all about it.
Uh-huh.
Before I came to BMW, I loved women's only classes as well, just because I like the idea of meeting other women and getting to ride with them and things like that. But I would have argued to my deathbed that we don't need anything differently.
Okay.
And now that I'm on the other side of it and I'm teaching and I'm seeing it, we do need different things. We don't need different curriculum. We don't need easier. We don't need harder. You know, the courses are the same. Mm. And at BMW, the curriculum's the same. The only thing that we change is that we add a little bit of extra time so that everybody, you know, we do this like picking up your bike demo. Well, we lay all the bikes down, so that all of the women can practice picking it up, so that they leave with the knowledge that even with a slight frame or whatever, or a short physique, that they can pick up their own bike by themselves out in the wild. And we have found that that is very confidence building for them. Awesome. I mean, the Performance Center did a whole study. They brought in women from all over, lots of different riding styles and types and like no experience, lots of experience. And they did a case study on how they should manage these women's classes. So they got a lot of good information, but that's really the biggest difference. Women learn differently than men. They just do.
Okay.
They
And tell me about
that. I had
that.
No idea before I
came here. You mean in terms of receiving the message or mm-hmm. how it should be communicated to them?
Yes.
Or, yeah.
Women listen and then do exactly what you tell them. And so you have to be very thoughtful in how you present information to them. Because if I say, do X, Y, Z, they're going to do X, Y, Z until I give them permission to do something else. And now I'm speaking in generalizations, obviously. Right, there's always an outlier.
Yeah.
But I experienced it myself and I didn't even realize it until becoming an instructor. For example, working on trial stops. What I heard when I was being taught how to do a trial stop was that you use your rear brake. Because what we say and what they said at the time was, unless you're super proficient with your front brake, start with the rear and then work into it. Well, I'm not going to assume I'm super proficient with the front brake. How do I know?
Of course.
So I'm just going to use the rear brake, which I did for months, and I couldn't get it. Finally, Melinda, one of the other female instructors, who's been with the Performance Center for many years, amazing instructor.
Yes.
She and I were doing a one-on-one training, and she said, why don't you just use your front brake?
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, I can use my front brake? Great. And then immediately did a trial stop, no problem. And so I think that what I see is that men won't even listen to the entire description of what they need to do, and they just go and they do it, right? Women will listen to everything and they will only do what you tell them.
Uh-huh.
So if they start messing something up, you told them incorrectly.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I will literally watch a group of women and go, oh crap, I forgot to tell them whatever, you know, that they can switch to the front brake. They're still using the rear. Got to let them know.
Huh.
And then a lot of times, so I find that women need permission more often than men.
Do you think it is because of the cultural roles that have been assigned to women over centuries or millennia?
Yeah.
Yeah?
So, I think it's how we're raised, for sure. It's definitely cultural in society.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you recently posted on Facebook that you taught the first all-female on-road class.
Yes, it was a one-day on-road, one-day off-road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a very positive experience for you.
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the camaraderie and the team spirit that women have when they get together and do something like a motorcycle class is just awesome to see and to be a part of. So.
All right. So before I ask you about, a specific question that I had in mind, can you... tell me, what is it about motorcycling that you love?
There is so much. Especially in the beginning. I guess I was a pretty adventurous person. Like, I would just hop in the car and go on trips or whatever. Hop on a plane and visit a friend or something like that. But motorcycling... gives you a freedom that you didn't realize you needed or that you didn't even realize you didn't have. Because I was a very free person, right? Like, I would just, one time a friend of mine at 11 o'clock at night was like, let's go to Toronto right now. This was before you needed a passport to do so. You just had to have your birth certificate. So I ran home and grabbed my birth certificate and an overnight bag, and we met back up, and we were on the road by midnight and drove from Indianapolis to Toronto that day. So I'm a pretty free spirit, but motorcycles brought that to a whole other level, which is pretty amazing. And now it's just... there's always more to learn.
Yes.
There's always more to learn, and I love it.
And that keeps me interested as well. So I will share something with you that I haven't really shared with a lot of people, so now I'm sharing it with a lot of people. I write poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote my first poem when I was perhaps 16 or... Mm-hmm. And it was not an angst-filled, love poem about some unattainable woman or, somebody I fancied. It was a celebration of my love affair with my motorcycle. So my first poem was about the freedom and the sense of, you know, being one with that machine that, you know, took you away from everything that was ordinary and gave you that permission, that, that little window into the extraordinary.
Yes.
And as I have continued, like you, I love learning, and I love learning more about the sport that I, you know, that keeps me alive and keeps me going.
Right.
And for me, that is, I will never be the best motorcyclist in the world.
Yeah.
But there is a chance that if I spend enough time tomorrow, I'll be a better motorcyclist than I am today.
That's exactly
and that keeps me going, and that keeps me interested, mm-hmm. and that keeps me, you know, young at heart.
Right.
So
that's exactly it.
All right. So good. We agree on that. So I noticed that you're wearing this shirt, which says BDR on it. Mm-hmm. And those of us who have toured and, you know, have done a little bit of on-road and off-road motorcycling, mm-hmm. we know what BDR is, but a lot of people don't. Mm-hmm. So could you tell us a little bit about the BDR and why you have that shirt?
The BDR stands for Backcountry Discovery Routes.
Okay.
Their website is ridebdr.com.
Uh-huh.
They create...
Easy for you to say.
They create routes that span the length of states. And so there are now 11 BDR routes.
Mm-hmm.
That's only a very small part of what they do. I mean, it's big. It's a huge part of what they do. But they also... work on land conservation for off-road riding. They work with, I think they work with government agencies and things like that. They're a nonprofit organization.
Mm-hmm.
And then in creating these routes, they think about sort of getting off the beaten path and bringing tourism dollars to areas that are in decline or, you know, into these ghost towns. They sort of revive these little towns that are on the decline. They did a case study. And in the case study, don't quote me on this, but I think the route that they studied, it was bringing in $2 million a year.
To the community.
Route. Not one community, but to the spread out along the communities of the BDR route.
Uh-huh.
Which is amazing. That's life-changing.
Yeah.
For those little towns. And so I think it's just such a great mission.
And these roads are...
off-road. Predominantly off-road.
Essentially. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the best places, there might be gravel roads. In other places, they're essentially dirt. And, you know, even, you know, a lot of rocks.
Deep sand and rocks and ruts and... ledges and boulders.
Right.
And, yeah.
So you, not so long ago, had a BDR experience, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh my gosh, it was amazing. So about a week and a half before filming the Wyoming BDR, Aaron, the program director at BMW, called and said, "Hey, big opportunity. Do you want to go film this BDR?" Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah.
And when you say film, that meant participate while somebody else is filming you riding the BDR.
Right,
exactly. Okay, good.
So what the BDR does, they create the routes. It takes years, you know, 2 to 4 years to create a route.
To scout and,
yeah,
you know,
to ride. To do all the scouting and planning and everything. And then once they have the route in place, they film a movie of a small group of people riding the route to sort of present it to the world. And when they do the premiere of the movie, they also release the tracks for free on their website. So you can get the tracks for all of the BDRs, not the Wyoming yet, but soon, for all of the BDRs for free on their website. You can go ride them for free, which is amazing. So Aaron called and he said, "Hey, you want to go on this trip?" And I was like, "Yeah, I want to go on this trip. When is it?" And he's like, "It's in a week and a half." I'm like, crap. Like, okay, well, like, let me call you back. So I had to call my bosses, right, my executives that I work with, the investment firm, and just, or at the private equity firm, and just say, like, "Hey, look, this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I really want to do it, but I understand it's last minute. Oh, it's in a week and a half, and it's a week and a half long. It's almost 2 weeks long that I'm going to be gone. What do you think?" And they both were amazing. They were like, well, this sounds like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and you need to go do it. So they gave me the time, and thankfully, Aaron had already ordered a bunch of gear.
Mm-hmm.
I had a bunch of gear, but it's COVID times, right? So right. We couldn't get boots for me.
Oh.
Aaron had to order pants from a dealership in California and have them shipped out. Like, we couldn't get them from BMW because they didn't have them anymore.
Oh, wow.
It was just wild, like, trying to collect all the gear and everything I was going to need in a week. And then also...
So, were you representing BMW or BMW yes. Rider School?
BMW is the major sponsor, the lead sponsor for the Wyoming BDR.
Okay.
So, they wanted to send... So, here's an advantage of being a woman in motorcycling right now.
Okay.
The organizations want to represent women, and so they are looking
because
they're right,
yeah.
and they want to accurately portray their riding base and things like that. So it makes sense. So they wanted for this position in particular, they wanted a woman who could ride, and. They often reach out to, like, BMW will often reach out, obviously, to the Performance Center for riders because we're trained and ready to go.
What a great opportunity for you because, you know, I mean, your focus right now is not in, you know, endurance riding or, you know, off-road riding. You're basically instructing people on how to, you know, react, respond, and ride responsibly and not get hurt while they're doing that.
Right. So yeah, my focus right now is to become fully certified.
Right.
That's what I'm putting all of my free time in. It's not going on, like, fun riding trips.
Right.
So to get to go do this was,
so this, like, was something, you know, I mean, they could have easily reached out to,
Anyway.
Yeah, people who do this, you know,
right.
like, because there we right. know there are women out there who are riding long distance and who
right.
have ridden around the world and, you know, not as famous as Ewan McGregor, but
right,
you know,
right, right.
but still, you know, they're out there, you know,
yes.
we see them, but they picked you
right.
to do this. So,
yeah.
How was the experience?
It was life changing.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew going into it that it was going to be a big deal, but I didn't realize all of the ways. I still don't realize all of the ways. The film's not even out yet, so
yeah.
we'll see what happens. But, it was definitely a pivotal moment in my riding career.
Yeah.
Now I want to be one of those people that's out riding all the time.
Yeah.
I have to balance that with the goals that I have now of
yeah.
being certified and, you know, taking care of a house and stuff. But
yeah.
we'll see.
So tell me about the certification that you talk about. You know, this is, we had talked, you know,
mm-hmm.
while we were off camera about you eventually wanting to be an international certified BMW instructor.
That was the secret.
Oops.
It's okay.
All right.
No, you know what? I think it's important to have goals, and even if it's 5 years off, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't, because that's, I mean, that's the direction you're moving in, right?
Right.
So are there any international certified women BMW instructors?
Not female BMW, not specifically at the Performance Center.
No.
But Jocelyn Snow, she's a BMW rider, and she is internationally certified, and she is a badass.
Is that right?
Yeah. So, and she has a training facility in Northern California that is amazing.
Yeah.
So, highly recommend going out there and checking it out.
Right.
Yeah.
So perhaps I could do that. I'll get that information from you,
yeah,
and I'd
awesome.
Be interested in,
yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
Northern California is fun.
I know,
I've
right?
ridden
especially
through
this time
California.
Of year.
Yeah.
But at the Performance Center, no, there's one instructor there that leads the program.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And so what does this certification entail? The one that you're closer to now, rather than you know
mm-hmm.
the one that you're further away from.
So to be fully certified at the U.S. Riders Academy, it takes about a year to a year and a half, and you can get certified in on-road or off-road. It depends on what your track is.
Mm.
My track is off-road, and right now I'm working towards being fully certified for a 2-day off-road course, and once that happens, it opens up a lot of other doors in the program. So, I would be able to do one-on-one private lessons by myself. I'd be able to do dealer events, lots of other things like that, where I can just sort of work autonomously representing the U.S. Writers Academy. So it's pretty exciting.
I'm excited for you. So we've known each other for, I don't know, 5 years?
4 or 5 years.
Four or five years, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I first met you, I was very favorably impressed by your personality because, not that kind of personality. It was, you know, as you said, Jocelyn Snow is badass. I think you're a badass, right? you represent women. You refuse to be intimidated by, you know, shows of, you know, masculinity or, as we were talking earlier, toxic masculinity. I think that you do a fantastic job of being a role model for not only women in general, but, you know, much closer to my heart is, you know, to younger girls, you know, children, females who are growing up in what is essentially, you know, still a little bit of a patriarchal society, and patriarchal world, I should say, right? Mm-hmm. And it is important for young females to have positive role models that show that you can be strong without being aggressive, mm-hmm. that you can be assertive without being, you know, annoying or, you know, sacrificing your femininity. Mm-hmm. And I have always admired you for that. Is this something that you set out to do, or is this something that just happened while you were walking your path?
It's definitely not. It was not a conscious decision, and I still struggle a little bit with seeing myself as a role model. Or it's something I think about, though, especially when I'm posting on Instagram or mm-hmm. somewhere where I remember when I first got my, like, a young follower on Instagram, and I was like, oh, it's time to change my message and be really thoughtful about the things I'm posting because now people are watching. And I want to be a good influence. But I don't know that I have that much sway or effect on people.
I think you do.
Yeah.
I think you do. And not only on women, but also on men who, you know, see somebody like you. And I mean, I found out today when you were doing your intro that the first time you rode dirt bikes was with us.
Yeah.
Right? And we were in Nebo, Illinois, of all places. And I remember watching you ride, and I remember looking over at my buddy and going, she can ride. You know, because, you know, we were all concerned that you guys were doing this for the first time.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, no, not only can she ride, but she also doesn't mind kickstarting
I came from vintage bikes, so I'm kickstarting. But, you know, when you follow someone who's, like, such an amazing rider like Mike...
Yeah.
And you just turn your brain off and you just follow them, and right. you have the benefit of the naivety of, like, you don't know what you're getting into, right? So,
yeah.
You just go.
Yeah.
The second day was way scarier than the first.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, we had fun.
But, you know, all of it is scary. Like, I don't want it to sound like I'm just super self-confident and I just go and do this and it's no problem and whatever. Like, I was terrified for the first 6 months that I was working at the performance center. Like, it, even though we're working on basic things, there's so many things there that can get kind of hairy or dicey, and it's nice that it's a safe and controlled environment, so you have that security, but we're still riding motorcycles, right? They're still dangerous. And so I don't ride fast. I still get nervous. Like, before the BDR, the night before we were supposed to ride the next day, I woke up in the middle of the night in a full panic attack, could not turn my brain off, like, terror panic attack, and I was like, I How did I get here? What am I doing? No, I got to the other side of it. I only dropped the bike once in sand. Just like, go me. And making those accomplishments, definitely it builds up your confidence. But you know, it's stairs. You go up the stairs and sometimes you come down a couple, and then you go up a few more stairs and then you come down a couple, and it's just a process.
Well, since we are being vulnerable here, let me share this with you. Every time that I go and ride, a dirt track that I am not familiar with, or don't know if I have stepped into something that is beyond my ability and my skill set, I have anxiety as well.
Yeah.
But you know what they say about courage, right? It's not being not afraid. It's being afraid and doing it anyways, right? And going through with it. Because, you know, the only way that we grow in life is by stepping outside our comfort zone,
yes,
right?
That is,
I think, where most of the growth happens, is when you challenge yourself and you commit to doing something that you're not really sure that you can do, or that you're not really sure that you can do well,
which keeps
a lot of people away from, especially men, because they're like, well, if I can't be an expert at it, I'm just not going to do it. I'm learning to play the guitar, and it is a process, and you're not going to be good at it. You know, some people are, you know, just have those
talented.
But, you know, most of us have to work at everything. Right. You know, it's something that requires a lot of practice, a lot of work, a lot of dedication. Right. So,
I mean, that's why I don't Argentine tango, because I wasn't instantly good at it the first time I tried it.
Oh, we didn't talk about your swing dancing. Tell me about your swing dancing career.
It was my first major hobby in life, and it's not a huge part of my life now, but it's really because of the pandemic and there isn't a lot of swing dancing. Otherwise, I'd be doing that too. But I started swing dancing in the late 90s, in like 1998. And when it was getting big and, you know, we had the Gap khaki commercial and everything.
Right.
I've always really been into vintage things and old music. And when I found swing dancing, it was just like, it like touched my soul in a place that had never happened before. And so I was instantly hooked. And back then, you know, you would just teach each other how to dance on the dance floor. It wasn't like super official or anything. And, you know, it's 22, 23 years now I've been swing dancing. I love it.
So are you a better motorcycle rider or are you a better swing dancer?
Now I'm a better motorcycle rider because I spend more time doing that. But I mean, both hobbies, the more you work at them, the better you get.
Right. Did you ever do dance competitively?
Mm-hmm.
You did.
I did a little bit. Yeah, a little bit. Won some competitions. But never made it international.
So inappropriately, in the middle of this conversation, I remember the name of the instructor that I was talking to you about earlier.
Okay.
Yeah. Doug Hillman.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
There you go.
From Illinois. Yeah.
Yeah. So Doug and I rode up in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he told me that he was a swing dance instructor. And then, you know, your name came up and he was like, oh, yeah, you know, I know her from the swing dancing. And that was actually one of the first times that I knew that you danced. You'd never mentioned it before.
Yeah.
Anyways, so we're kind of drawing to an end here. I would ask you a couple of questions.
Okay.
One is, you know, if you were talking, you know, I have a daughter and she is in her career, et cetera. But, you know, let's say you were talking to her when she was 10.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what message would you give her or anybody else her age in terms of attempting or moving towards things that seem impossible?
Two things. One is that you don't need to go from 0 to 10. You just need to go from 0 to 1. And taking steps towards that 10 will get you there faster than trying to just get to 10. The other thing is, especially with young girls, I would tell them that you have every right to be here just as much as everybody else. Mm. You are just as capable. So, you know, put in the hard work, stay focused, and get it done. You don't have to ask permission to be here.
I could not agree with you more. If you had access to a time machine, mm-hmm. and you could go back in time and you could change one thing in your life, is there anything
that you... I would have given myself a dirt bike at age 3. Here you go, little Wendy. Yeah. Have a great time. I mean, like, you see these riders who've been riding since they were 3 years old.
Yeah.
We have an instructor right now in training, and she's an amazing racer. And, you know, we would say, like, oh, you make it look so easy or whatever. And she's like, well, all you have to do is start riding when you're 3 years old. Ride every day of your life. Yeah. Well, you know, that sort of thing.
It's like, a little too late for that.
Yeah. It's a little too late for that, but it would have been sweet.
I remember going down to the MotoGP one time. Mm-hmm. For some reason, they gave us access to the paddocks, which is where the racers
just
are.
Randomly for some
just
reason.
Randomly, yeah. Jimmy and I were just walking around, and they said, "You want to go into the paddocks?" And we were like, "Can we?"
Yeah.
And they were like, "Yeah." So we went around and we looked at the different racers and all that stuff. And you know, they were posing for photos with fans, and you know, all you had to do was go up and say, "Okay, you know, can I get a picture taken with you?" And I had my picture taken. And I had my picture taken with Elena Myers. Do you remember Elena Myers? Mm-hmm. She used to be a motorcycle racer.
Okay.
And she was an amazing racer. But same thing, had been racing and riding motorcycles since she was about 5 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, she was unbelievable.
Yes.
You know, and I watched her race and I was like, ooh, I don't want to get my picture taken with her.
Yeah.
So, you know. Thank you very much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for having
and
me.
And I will try and get this loaded up on both YouTube and my podcast website.
Sweet.
And I'm tweaking it a little bit, trying to add music to it and so on and so forth. So hopefully, writing, it's a work in progress.
Right.
You know, this is one of the things that I have set for myself as a challenge.
Nice.
But thank you for your time, and thank you for letting me stay at your place.
Of course.
You know, and now that I have a base in the Carolinas, hopefully I'll see more of you by coming down here, and hopefully you'll come up to Illinois and ride with us again.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
Bye.